So next up we have Paul Bennon, who is Chief Creative Officer at something else. Just bear with us while we swap over the presentations. That should be easy. Something else, do all kinds of interesting content creation for various different clients. But what Paul's going to talk to us today about is Papa Sangre. Has anyone played Papa Sangre? A few players here.
Oh, really?
Ah, okay. Excellent.
Fantastic.
And in the front row, perfect. So he's going to tell us a bit about how they created that, and particularly the sound, which is the most important factor in the game.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm going to pick on someone first, I think. Hello. What's your name? With the green jumper on. Yeah. Bill. Phil. Hello, Phil. Would you mind doing me a favour? Would you be comfortable if we had a little chat? Okay. Would you stand up? Okay. Now, hello, Phil. What I want to do, first of all, if it's all right with you, Phil, don't worry, nothing untoward is going to happen. Very, very simple. It's just a very quick demonstration of how good we are at hearing, because we often don't realise how good we are at hearing. And if you make movies or you do other things like that, you may realise how important sound is. And that's what Papa Sangre and the Papa Engine do. So would you do me a favour and close your eyes? Now, point at me. Okay. Now, you're pointing at me. I'd say that's pointed exactly at me. Point at me again. Not bad. Would you mind standing up and asking Phil to point at you? And say it again.
Phil, can you point at me, please?
Okay, that's pretty good. And would you mind doing the same thing?
Bill, could you point at me, please?
Okay. You might look at that and think, well, actually, that's extremely trivial, because what Phil's done is something that we all do. You know, you hear a sound and you point at it. But actually, that's not trivial at all, if you actually think about it. And it's very simple. Obviously, you cognitively know that if something is visible and it's there, this is assuming that you can see, which we'll come back to. But if you can't, sorry, Phil, sorry, thank you very much. That's awesome. You can sit down. God, sorry, Phil. But it's actually not as obvious as you might think. It's an extraordinary skill that we've got as humans to be able to exactly locate something just using our ears, and not just locate its direction, but it's also its spatial representation to us. And it's amazing because we're not born with it. You may think that you are, but you're not. It's a thing that you learn how to do. And I'll be coming back to this. So what we decided to do was kind of stupid. We decided about 4 or 5 years ago to make a video game where there was no video whatsoever, where the entire world was created for you using sound. So there's nothing to see at all. And we decided that we were going to create a world exactly like a 3D video game, except with no graphics. We're going to have objects in that world that we're going to emit sound, and the player would have to interact with those objects in real time as they moved around, and we'd build a game like that. It sounded like a really obvious idea. It's not the first time someone's had that idea. Plenty of people have had this idea. But when we started making it, we realized, in fact, it was incredibly hard. The reason why it's hard is because if, let's say that this is stereo, and there's a speaker, in fact, there is a speaker there, and there's a speaker there. Now, the sound stage that I've got means that to a listener, I can pinpoint a piece of audio anywhere between there and there. Obviously, I can't pinpoint anything beyond those speakers, and I certainly can't pinpoint anything behind us, behind you. So, but human beings can do it, and human beings can do it because we don't hear in stereo. We have two ears, but they don't act like speakers. We have what's known as binaural hearing, not stereo speaking, binaural, obviously binary, two oral, two ears. And binaural hearing is very, very different. What happens is that if I made a noise and I was standing in front of me, then Phil, if I was standing directly in front of Phil, my voice is going to hit Phil's two lug holes exactly at the same time, careen around his pinna, this thing here, and then go inside his auditory canal, get picked up, and his brain's going to go, yeah, Paul's right there. But if I'm over here, and I'm speaking to Phil, and he's looking straight forward, I'm going to hit his right ear before his left ear, first of all. So there's a tiny interaural delay between his left ear and his right ear. And not just that, but some of my sound is going to go through his brain. It's going to go through his skull case. And the result of that is that certain frequencies are going to get attenuated, like high-pitched ones are going to get absorbed by his brain, and low frequencies are going to pass through. And the lug hole also acts as a sort of delay as well. It sort of increases the delay at certain frequencies so that you work out when you're, you know, your brain will learn how to, as you grow up, will learn how to relate certain sounds that you can hear to where those objects are. And it's not something that we're born with. So we had to do that. We had to mimic how the human head works, the physical head works inside a game. And I'll show you how we did it in a minute. And arising from this are a whole bunch of things in terms of sort of science, art, and psychology. So Papa Sangre 2 is the second game we just released. It's the best ever reviewed game from a British studio, according to Metacritic. The best iOS game of the year, according to Metacritic. 94% on Metacritic, which is amazing for a game with no bloody graphics. And this is how it looks and sounds. And I'm hoping that the... That was people playing the game. You can't see.
Don't move. That's a forgotten man. If the catcher is annihilation of the soul, they can smell memory from miles. They hear everything. I'll read you the card. Max Johnson. Memory of submarine disaster.
Okay. What you can't see quite there is that you have to wear headphones when you play the game. As you turn around, in real time, the objects move around in a spatial form. So as you turn around, the objects will, everything, that even if you're moving as you're walking through the space, or the objects are moving, they will be rendered spatially on the fly as you move through. And the effect is incredibly uncanny. It's more like being inside a novel than playing a video game. How do we do this? Now, this is an anechoic chamber with lots of microphones pointed at a dude in the middle. An anechoic chamber is a room with no echoes. What you have to do, it's very simple, actually. You have to, anyone could do it. You get a dummy head, which is a head that has the same sort of, it's a fake head that has the resonant qualities of a human head, but with two very good microphones in the ear. You put it inside an anechoic chamber, and you beam white noise at the dummy head from 1,000 different points in a sphere around you. Piece of piss. Then you express the interaural delay and frequency attenuation in different bands as a massive table of numbers. We've all done it. Once you've done that, that's when the really easy bit happens, because you then remove the white noise and you apply your own sound, and you apply the appropriate table entry to it, and oopsie-daisy, and you write game logic so that the sounds relative to player, then reapply the appropriate table entry 100,000 times a second. We're very lucky. There's an organisation called ERCAM in France, and this massive table is called an HRTF. That's a very difficult job. So we're standing on the shoulders of giants there, and thanks ERCAM for that. But making that, rendering that in real time inside a game engine was incredibly hard. But we did it, actually. We did it. And what did we learn? That's a bit more audio. You're on a submarine underwater. no more frightening place to be. I'm probably taking too long, so I'll speed up a tiny bit. But we learned that when it's audio, you are you. Papa Sangre is the ultimate first-person game. Because the information that you're receiving in your ears when you have your eyes closed is exactly the same information that you would be getting if those objects were emitting sounds in the place you were actually there. It's actually like you're there in terms of how your brain reads the information that you're receiving. It's not like you're looking at a screen that you're then mediating and you have the uncanny valley and there's even with Oculus Rift, it's not quite the same. And with graphics, I can't see what's behind me. I don't have speakers in the back of my head. But with audio, my brain is making a cognitive map of everything that's around me at every point. So you are you. Every single step that you take matters, and it's incredibly personal, and it's incredibly unnerving when you play it. It's £2.49 on the App Store. We also learned that you learn to hear, and the corollary of that is that if you can't see anyway, the game is very different. By that I mean sighted people very often find the concept of the dark frightening. Blind people don't. It's just life, and this is one of our design considerations. And we had a long debate. Plenty of debates about this subject, because we made a world that was frightening with Papa Sangre and Papa Sangre 2. But the frightening, if you can or you can't see, anyway, I think it's frightening being rent limb from limb by a mind louse, whether I'm blind or not. But in some of the reviews that we had, and some of the our blind players pointed out that at some points we'd made biases that assumed that the dark or the lack of sight equated one thing emotionally in someone's life when it didn't. So in terms of disability, in terms of how you create a system that that is accessible, but not only accessible, that sort of is equal in its conception of all of its players, maybe we made the odd misstep earlier on in our early games. We wanted to make games that everyone could play, blind people being a subset of everyone. Not games for blind people, not accessible games, but awesome games that blind people could also play. But nonetheless, that proved to be slightly more difficult because of discriminatory biases in the games makers, despite our best endeavours. I won't say it's bad, it's not bad at all, but it's just an interesting point. Input must equal output. One interesting thing about binaural hearing, that is a cognitive point, is that in all games you want to have a proportional output, an output that is proportional to the input, because people get annoyed otherwise. Meaning, if I'm on a game controller, I want to be sure that if I use the game controller in a certain way, the response I get is going to be something that I understand. And if you don't get that right in a game, in a video game, it can be irritating, and it can be bad game design. But if you get that wrong in an audio game, it's not just irritating, the game is broken, it is unplayable, because the human body, the way that we learn how to orient ourselves with audio, says that that your cognitive map is inviolable. If Phil's making a noise and I turn around like this, and that doesn't actually match what Phil is doing, then my mental model is broken and it's just a bunch of sound. It isn't like a bad, annoying game, it's just a bunch of gibberish sound. And that's why, in terms of the design decisions that we made in terms of how you interact with the game, the first game that we had, there was a compass that you would sort of scroll using your thumb. As you move from left to right, proportionally to the input, there was an analog response. But with the new game, we've actually got rid of that completely, and we're using the accelerometer of the game, so when you actually physically turn around, then the world moves with you. And that way, we're actually matching physical, sort of, you know, we're going a step further and using your cognitive, your proprioceptive map of the world, and mapping that onto gameplay. That's all I was going to say, but yeah, thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Paul?
Yeah. Why is low frequency sound not recorded? Why does it go through? Low frequency sound had a physical effect on the human body.
So, to make that clearer, Low frequency sounds absolutely are recorded and acknowledged by humans, but certain frequencies just get absorbed by different bits of the body in different ways. And very low frequency sounds are unidirectional. You can't actually, if there's a subwoofer in your 5.1 system at home, you can put it under the sofa in front of you, behind you, and you won't be able to tell where it is. But above a certain frequency, it starts being directional. And it's the difference between the low frequencies that one ear will perceive and the other that enables you to work out where something is. So it's not just they're completely blanked out. They're blanked out. A sound from over here will be attenuated at different frequency bands with no attenuation with this ear, but a bit of attenuation with this ear, because it's going through my head. And the brain works out the difference between those attenuated bands and then uses that to orient herself.
The HRTF table you talked about, isn't it different for each person? Shouldn't it be different for each person?
So should an HRTF be different for each person? Yes, it should. Different people have different widths of head. They have different shapes of skull. They have different shapes of pinnae, and so on. So yes, some people, when they play, we use one quite generic HRTF, which I won't give the gender or anything of it, just because. But officially, yes, you should have different HRTFs for different players. So two things happen here. First of all, we actually have a variety of different HRTFs that you can choose. It stands for head-related transfer function. Our game lets you choose different HRTFs, but for some people it just doesn't work at all. But the second thing is that in the same way that when you grow up, your brain doesn't have an HRTF inside it. You actually start to work out what a sound from over there, that a sound from over there is over there as you grow. And so, frankly, once you've actually been through that cycle, this isn't an area of neuroplasticity. It's an area of short-term sort of memory and cognition that you're able to start mapping on the new environment in sound onto this new environment that you find yourself in. It's not entirely effective, and for some people it just doesn't work at all. But so yes, but is the answer. Yeah.
Another question from Tom.
So since this is an iPhone game, right, or a tablet game that you use with headphones, I played it. It might be one of yours. I think it's the Nightjar. So is that one of your early ones? Was it? Yeah. So that was really good, and that really pinpointed the audio, even one of your earlier games. But I find that AAA games, say off a PlayStation or an Xbox, don't have that same kind of audio fidelity. And I have a 3D kind of conversion box, to convert things down to stereo. So I'm wondering if you guys can do it, and I know that you can do it really well from experience, how come big companies with shed tons of money can't also perform the same feat?
I am so glad you asked that. It's a fairly obvious question, right?
Yeah, so this entire speech has been leading up to this question. And I'm joking. There's a couple of reasons why that's the case. I should note at this point that the Papa engine, thanks to the Technology Strategy Board, now has a fantastic API and has been ported over to C++, well, to lower level languages, so that anyone can now license it and use it in their game. So give us a call. But the reason why that's been the case is twofold. The primary reason has been that There hasn't been an API for audio, spatial audio, that makes sense for a game developer. It's a very practical point about the way that an API is being constructed. If you look at the way that things like OpenAL, which have binaural panners inside them, have been implemented, they don't give the same kind of control. It's not the same kind of fine object-oriented control in a way that's with functions that are exposed to a game developer to enable them to use that those spatial functions properly, and as a result, no one does. That's the first thing. The second thing is that just like Twitter really took off when mobile phones started to get very prevalent. And for true binaural audio to work, rendered on the fly using HRTFs, you really have to have headphones. And you have to have this point where the interface that you have is proportional to the input that you make via an interface is proportional to the output that you get. And that only really, frankly, existed until the new DualShock controllers come out for PlayStation 4. That only really existed on mobile devices. So that leads us on to saying, well, why hadn't anyone implemented it on a mobile device before? And the answer to that is because it's very, very, very hard. If you're taking an object, more than one object, you're calculating which different frequencies should be attenuated at different points and what the interaural delay between the left speaker and the right speaker should be, and then you've got a whole bunch of different objects that are moving around as you're moving, the mass demands on the processor is incredibly high. And there's some smart stuff that we've done with the Papa engine, which means that we can now do that. And there are a few other sort of very specific things in terms of binaural processing that as far as we're aware, haven't previously been done. But we are now we're pimping out the Papa engine, and we absolutely love for game developers to take it, and because you really can start seeing things behind you now.
Sorry, I'm not a developer, so I'm going to ask a stupid question, which is it easy to then sync the video with the graphics with the audio in that way?
Yes, it's not a stupid question at all. Any game sort of builds up a state of the world at that point. These objects are here, those objects are there, this is what the state of that is, that's what the state of that is. And those are just numbers and variables inside the system. And you can make, as a developer can make those variables visible to our engine as they could to any other engine. So we can just read them and just say, well, if that's there, then that's there.
So you just attach a sound to every object and then
render it. Yeah.
I had a question. I mean, is this the reason why it works on iOS? Is because obviously they've made that, you know, they've done it in a way that made it possible for you to do that, which wasn't possible on, say, Android. Did they do that on purpose? Did they know people were going to do that? Why was it so much better on iOS?
Why was it better on iOS? The history of Android was not so. iOS is a 25-year-old operating system that comes from NextStep. And when it was first made, it had very advanced, very low latency audio-visual handling. The Android OS, before Apple's phones came along, were designed to look like BlackBerries. And the audio stack was very, very bad. And iOS also had this very low level. They took some of the most common math functions, like floating point calculations and fast Fourier transforms, and they expressed them in this framework called the Accelerate framework, by going right back to the instruction set of the processor itself and saying, what's the fastest that we can do these sums? Without that, Papa Sangre would not have worked on any device. But now, speed of chips have crept up now, and Android devices can now keep up just through the fact that the chips are faster. So we've now ported our stuff so it works on Android. I think that's the first public announcement of that, but it's not out yet. So it works, but it's not out yet. It's not optimized yet.
Any other questions?
Hi, hello again. I just want to ask about the game. You want to make this game that kind of evokes this strong emotion of fear in the player, and you're using that only using sound. What kind of decisions did you have to make in terms of the content and the sound you're using? Is it something like low frequency indices we find scarier? What was your kind of thought processes behind that?
That's a really great question. And the answer is that the pace of the game is a lot slower than many action games or 3D puzzle games. Because it is, you know, most people, it takes a little bit longer to orient themselves and to work out what's going on. And if there are too many objects emitting sound, it becomes very confusing. So what was scary, in other words, was, well, what is scary in that environment? And it becomes sort of psychological horror. It's the anti-dopamine. It's the incipient threat. It's threat rather than a sort of very imminent peril. It's uncertain threat. It's and suspense. Yes, exactly. So it's all the things that make a scary novel or a Hitchcock film scary, rather than just. So the other thing is that it has to be things that you can see as well. So the snuffle hog was in our earlier games. He's doing that. You can just picture how he smells and what he's going to be like, and he's going to creep up on you and mess you up, or you know. And it's things that you know are horrible without being able to see them. So it was an exercise in writing, is what it was. An exercise in writing and then sound design that made things scary.
Were you the snuffle hog?
Sometimes.
One more question.
Just wondering, when you were designing the game, did you use visual to conceptualise some of the creatures and characters in the game? And do you get any fan art?
Fan sounds would be good. Someone did take the Nightjar with Benedict Cumberbatch and take out all of his words and turn it into sort of soft porn. Sort of female soft porn. So that was the one piece of fan sort of response that we had based on our work. We had a list of 10 commandments of design commandments when we were making the game. One of those design commandments was no visual representation of space, and that's spilled over into other things as well. Because as soon as you can see something, the magic is gone. And we found that is. The graphics card in your brain is way better than any other graphics card, and so we had to always bear that in mind. And even for us, as soon as we started trying to visualize stuff and write it down, then they started to evaporate. So no, we didn't.